welcome to Nashville Anthems, dissecting 80s and 90s country music. Please sit anywhere you like. If you really want to know, our project on Nashville Anthems is to approach 80s and 90s country music and ask it why it works so particularly well. And we do that by staring across the room at the songs played on satellite radio's 80s and 90s country station, one at a time. Today, satellite radio has pointed our attention at an all-time classic, John Anderson's 1991 comeback hit, Straight Tequila Night. So, if you haven't already, why don't you go ahead and pause me now and give Straight Tequila Night a close listen or two. And now, let's get into it. First off, as always, we want to give credit where credit is due, courtesy of our familiar friends, Wikipedia and Billboard. Straight Tequila Night was written by Debbie Hupp and Kent Robbins, and it appeared on John Anderson's classic album, Seminole Wind, the title track of which we, of course, covered early on this podcast with our third episode. In that episode, I noted that Straight Tequila Night also appeared on that album, and that I hoped we'd eventually get to it. And well, I guess sometimes dreams really do come true. Anderson took Straight Tequila Night all the way to number one on the Billboard country chart in May of 1992, beating out Nashville anthems like Alan Jackson's Dallas, Alabama's Born Country, Lori Morgan's Except for Monday, and Garth Brooks's What She's Doing Now. That's 1992 for you. As I mentioned, Straight Tequila Night was John Anderson's comeback song, really his first song to crack the top 10 since 1986's Honky Tonk Crowd, which barely did. His previous heyday was really a few years before that, 1983 and 1984. But 1992 was a comeback year for John Anderson, as country sort of came around to his more traditional honky tonk style. And while Seminole Wind's first single went nowhere, Straight Tequila Night kicked off a string of hits for him in the early to mid 90s. But yeah, I think it's fair to say that Straight Tequila Night is the song he is best known for throughout his career and is an enduring classic of the era that just sounds like 90s country. Kind of similar to what I said about Neon Moon. It's just the song that I have in my head when I think about this era. Straight Tequila Night is, in fact, such a classic that I actually recently heard it not on the 80s and 90s country station, but on satellite radio's classic country station recently, the one that typically plays only 60s, 70s, and sometimes 80s. Out of nowhere, they broke out a song from 1991-92 and didn't bat an eye about it. Well, anyway, let's just round out the credits. Straight Tequila Night was produced by a name we've run into a few times before on both Clint Black episodes, for example, and our Little Texas episode, and now on both John Anderson episodes. That's that of James Stroud. All right, so those are some essential facts, but let's get into the song itself and find out at least what I'm hearing in this early 90s classic that makes it what it is. Let's start off with this. I contend that something sounds off in Straight Tequila Night. Do you know what I'm talking about? Are you smelling what I'm stepping in there? There's some darkness here, but less of the brooding variety of something like Rodeo and Billy the Kid, and more of the uncanny variety, a hard-to-put-your-finger-on kind of quality that we're going to attempt to break down. Because there are several things going on in this song that I think contribute to this uncanny feeling. First off, we're encountering something in Straight Tequila Night that isn't terribly uncommon in popular music, but hadn't come up for us before on Nashville Anthems. Straight Tequila Night is slightly out of tune. Not out of tune with itself, mind you, but out of tune with standard A440 tuning. That's the Western music standard. The note A above middle C is fundamentally a frequency of 440 Hz. You got to standardize around something, and the Western world has standardized around A440. So when Joe Schmoes like Melton McMahonberry whip their pre-tuned electronic keyboards out and play along with random 80s and 90s country songs, they can be pretty confident that their keyboards can play along with said songs without any intonation issues, because Melton's keyboard is, of course, tuned to A440. But John Anderson and James Stroud threw us a curveball this time, tuning Straight Tequila Night a little sharper than that. Now, by trial and error, I zeroed in on about 20% sharp. In other words, 20% of a half step up, which, if I did the math correctly, works out to about A453. Probably not exactly that, but in that ballpark anyway. Now, more than likely, what's going on here is that the band played the song in the key of A major, and James Stroud sped the tempo of the final recording up a hair, with the pitch raise just a byproduct of the tempo change. Stop and appreciate that for a second. This is something George Martin did more than once on Beatles records, famously on Strawberry Fields Forever, for example, speeding up or slowing down a recording and thus changing the pitch. In a digital age, an age where the free software I use to produce this podcast, shout out to Audacity, allows me to adjust the pitch of recordings without changing the tempo and vice versa, there's something beautifully analog about the idea of simply, literally, spinning the tape slower or faster to adjust something about the sound of recording. But either way, the effect is that, in the context of all the other songs that had been playing on the radio that day in 1992 when you heard this song, many of them also in A or related keys like D and E, Straight to Kill a Night hits that first chord and sounds foreign to our ears. Pitch-wise, there's truly something off about Straight to Kill a Night. Just for fun, here's what happens if I play along on my A440 keyboard with this A450-ish recording. You're welcome. Okay, but that's not all. There's more to the uncanny sound of Straight to Kill a Night, and it's this. Straight to Kill a Night's super famous, super hooky, super catchy, super classic chorus is full of out-of-chord melody notes. Now, the song sounds so natural, and frankly, I've just heard it so many times, and I bet you have too, that our ears have long recalibrated their melodic expectations such that this melody now goes exactly where we expect it to. But if we can turn back the clock and listen with fresh ears, I think we'll find some melodic surprises here. Let's take a swig of that first line. Don't ask her on a straight to keep the night. All right, here's the melody. Again, the song is in A, or at least we'll tune it down to A. So John Anderson's melody note is the third of the starting A chord, C sharp. Nothing out of chord there. Yet. But the chords change rapidly in this song, especially in the chorus, where the chords change steadily, repetitively, every two beats. The pattern is simply 1, 5, 4, 5, 1, 5, 4, 5, over and over again. A, E, D, E. A, E, D, E. Don't ask her on a string to keep the night. You'll start thinking about him, and she's ready to fight. The changes are so rapid that by the time Anderson gets to the second word, ask, as in don't ask her on a straight, still on the note C sharp, the chord has already changed from an A to an E. So you get this effect. The C sharp changes from an in chord third degree to an out of chord sixth degree. The next note corrects that, so to speak, by going down to a B, the fifth degree of that E chord. Then a couple of syllables later, on the word straight, Anderson is back on that note B, and a similar thing happens to what happened on ask. The chord has changed now to a D, making the B note an out-of-chord sixth degree in the D chord. But don't ask her on a straight. Then on the second syllable of tequila, the key syllable, Anderson is back up to a C sharp while the chord is back to E, making the melody note, you guessed it, another sixth degree. But don't ask her on a string to keep. Then all is well as the phrase resolves back to an A chord and Anderson sings A, F sharp, E, or the root, the sixth, but it's just a passing tone, and the fifth degrees of that tonic chord. Actually, let's keep going because the effect does. She'll start thinking about him, and she's ready to fight. She'll start thinking is an A note over an E chord. Not a suspended E chord either. So the A note is just a straight up, very dissonant, fourth degree inside of a major triad. The rest of that phrase is standard stuff until the last note. And she's ready to fight. And she's ready to fight. The note on fight is led into by roots of five chords, E, which signal that this note is coming, the root of the upcoming tonic chord, A, as the phrase resolves. But that's not what happens. Instead, Anderson's melody just goes up one step to F sharp, another sixth degree, and quite an odd note in the phrase on.
And she's ready to fight.
Just one more bit to drive the point home.
Blames her broken heart on every man inside.
That broken heart melody is F sharp and A over an E chord. Utter musical nonsense. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And heart is the note B over a D chord. A sixth. A chord degree this song leans on, as we've seen.
Blames her broken heart.
There's actually another one right after that on Man, which is a C sharp over an E chord.
Every man inside.
So the rest of the chorus is pretty standard, but you get the picture, right? Out of chord note after out of chord note in this chorus. But it's even more than that. One, these out-of-chord notes are not incidental, passing tones in the melody. No, they are the main thing. They land right on chord changes, on strong beats 1 and 3. They're sustained and repeated. The chorus's melody is quite simply built around these odd tones. But it's even more than that. It's not just that they're out of chord, it's that they belong to adjacent chords. Does that make sense? The C sharps over the E chords belong to the A chord that either just happened or is about to happen. Same with the A note over the E chord. The B notes over the D chords belong to the E chords that follow. It's like the melody is occurring at the wrong place in the song. The effect is less that the harmony is odd, and more that the melody is misplaced in the chord progression. Give this chorus a listen with as fresh of ears as you can muster. And see if you can hear the uncanny effect of this misalignment between melody and harmony.
But don't ask her on a string to keep the night. She'll start thinking about him, and she's ready to fight. Blames her broken heart on every man inside. On a string to keep the night.
But wait, dear listener, there's more. It's not just odd things going on with pitch and melody in this song. Again, slightly off things, not entirely off things. Uncanny, not outrageous. But the next thing I want to point to is the way the intro and then the similar turnarounds hit the ear. A couple of things happening here. Let's call it harmony and harmonics. In the harmony camp, we have a song that, in both the verse and the chorus, is steadily, repetitively, and unapologetically a three-chord country song in a major key. The chords in the verse are 1, 5, 4, 1, 5, 4. And again, the chords in the chorus are the similar 1, 5, 4, 5, 1, 5, 4, 5. But the intro is... That's 6, 4, 5... 6, 4, 5. The timing of the changes and the length of the repetition is the same as on the verse, but that's where the similarities end. I mean, the verse is actually kind of bright, but this intro definitely is not. In fact, that first chord, the sixth chord, not only is it minor, but it's a minor second, with the twangy melody note starting right off on that very dissonant second chord degree. It's a G sharp inside of the triad F sharp, A, C sharp, and F minor triad, a Thunder Rolls territory, the stuff of black and white horror films, and basically the most sinister way to start a song harmonically. Well, maybe the second most. The other is the so-called devil's interval, the tritone or augmented fourth. That'd be that same G sharp against this note, a D. So, where does this song go after that F-sharp minor second chord we were just talking about? Well, it goes to a D major chord, but the melody there lands the first beat of the chord on a G-sharp, way out of chord. very dissonant and forming a tritone between the melody note G sharp and the root of the chord being played, D. So after that, the harmony goes to an E chord where the G sharp finally makes sense. Then it repeats. So that's how the song starts, and it comes back after each chorus to kind of recenter the song in this dark place.
Here's a glass of Chablis.
Actually, did you hear that? That final E chord on the repeat is syncopated. It falls on the upbeat of 4 rather than right on 1 of the next measure. I didn't catch that before. I believe that is the only syncopation in the rhythm track of this song. So still more contrast between this jarring intro and the more comfortable verse. But notice not just the harmony on this intro, but the harmonics. We talked about this in the Killin' Time episode with that crazy Telecaster intro I just couldn't get off of. Straight to Kill a Night does something similar in this intro. There are at least a couple of instruments playing the melody on this intro. You can kind of hear a couple things going on in there. But the most prominent sound, at least to my ear, is the twangy, harmonic-laced Telecaster. Harmonics, again, are pitches that get played in addition to the fundamental pitch an instrument or a voice produces. They are softer in volume, and they're usually, I think always, they have to be higher in pitch than the fundamental. And they are where all the color is in an instrument or a voice's specific timbre. Some instruments' tones are more pure than others, so they have fewer, softer harmonics. In other words, take a xylophone, for example. Others are so full of harmonics that they sound dirty or twangy. And that's really what you hear in the signature sound of country music's favorite electric axe, the Fender Telecaster. What harmonics do is they muddy up the harmony, especially when the harmony is already kind of muddy or dissonant. So in this intro, you layer these twangy harmonics on top of this minor second and tritone harmony, and shift the pitch of the whole thing slightly sharp, and you end up with something that sounds like this. It all adds up, right? No one effect I mentioned makes a huge difference, but by the time the effects all accumulate, and in some cases interact and mutually exacerbate, you find yourself with a cut that feels a little uncomfortable, while having a sound all its own. So, that's a lot about what I'm hearing as the overall uncanny sound of Straight Tequila Night, but sonically, there's something else I want to point out, and it's been a common feature among many of the songs we've examined on this podcast, but it stood out more to me on this song than on others. It's the overall idea of sonic texture. It's the layers. It's the interactions between different timbres. It's the sonic fullness of a song, the weight and chewiness of this song's instrumental and vocal arrangement. This is a rather thick song, sonically, especially in the choruses. But let's start with the verses. And obviously, we have to go first to John Anderson's voice. I'm going to repeat a lot of what I said in the Seminole Wind episode here, but how can I not? John Anderson's unique and intriguing voice is the centerpiece of any John Anderson song, and Straight Tequila Night certainly isn't going to be an exception to that rule.
If you really want to know, she comes here a lot. She just loves to hear the music and dance.
Anderson delivers his vocals in this signature breathy sort of way, where he like fades in each vowel, such that every syllable sounds like a crescendo, or really a sforzando. Now, those are specific music terms. Crescendo, I'm guessing many or most of you are already familiar with. It just means gradually increasing the volume of a note or phrase over its duration. Listen to John Anderson do that on basically every vowel he sings on Straight Tequila Night.
May 13 is her favorite song. If you play it, you might have a chance.
There's more to it. It's more than just a fade in, because he often hits the beginning of a syllable harder and then drops down or completely out before crescendoing back up. He at least articulates that leading consonant.
Tonight she's only sipping white wine.
And that's a sforzando. It's the musical move of hitting a note hard, then rapidly dropping out, usually then immediately starting a crescendo back up. Chicago, the band Chicago, does this all the time in the horn section. Here are a couple of examples. All right, so with that in your ear, listen again to some of John Anderson's breathy syllables, how he employs this sforzando crescendo move over and over again.
Here's a glass of Chablis and some quarters and change. Maybe you can turn her love life around. Then she won't need the salt or the lime anymore to shoot that old memory down.
It's like hits, hesitates, then commits. Hits, hesitates, then commits. It's John Anderson's signature vocal style, and in Seminole Wind, its breathiness contributed to a certain spirituality of that song. Here, the effect is not quite spiritual, but it is an integral part of the specific sonic texture that is so key to the song's overall signature sound. Now, with that said, as unique a contribution to the texture of the verses that John Anderson's voice is, the instrumental setup is pretty typical neo-traditional honky-tonk. The rhythm section is as you'd expect, bass, drums, and acoustic guitar, along with the Brooks and Dunn move of adding piano to emphasize the chord changes.
If you really want to know, she comes here a lot. She just loves to hear the music and dance.
The piano brightens up these verses, as we've mentioned. The verses on Straight Tequila Night are certainly the lightest and brightest parts of the song. But as we've discussed before, piano also adds weight to an instrumental arrangement and serves here to thicken up the texture of these verses. The effect of the weighty piano complements nicely Anderson's airy vocals. Where Anderson sforzandos, then crescendos, piano attacks, then decrescendos, or gradually, rather than immediately, fades without crescendoing back.
K-13 is her favorite song. If you play it, you might have a chance.
It's a nice touch, this bonus piano. Not something your ear necessarily explicitly picks up if you're just casually listening, but your ear certainly does take in this texture as a whole. And the setup is kind of the standard rhythm set, kind of the antes in the neo-traditional game, if you will, with the piano chords flanking it on one side and the breathy vocals on the other, as slight deviations from the norm to give this song a little color and a little more texture. Then, in addition to some twangy, atmospheric electric guitar that's featured in the pre-chorus, you have two very important instruments doing fills between vocal lines, both of them blending beautifully with the vocal sound, somehow in their bends and unexpected sustains, suggesting some of that John Anderson vowel delay that we keep talking about. And that's pedal steel guitar in verse 1,
dance. K-13.
And dobro in verse 2.
Around, then she won't.
So that's already a pretty chewy arrangement, right? But in the chorus, the texture thickens considerably. The rhythm track is still there, although we get a thicker backbeat as the drummer transitions to snare a la Lost and Found on 2 and 4.
Don't ask her on a straight tequila night. She'll start thinking about him, and she's ready to fight.
You can barely hear the acoustic guitar anymore just because of everything else that's happening, so essentially it becomes texture only.
Blames her broken heart on every man inside.
And I'm not sure about the piano. It may still be there, but if it is, it's pretty drowned out. And that's because two key things happen to give Straight Tequila Night a super thick sonic texture in the chorus. The first is the addition of harmony vocals. Now, background vocals is something we pointed out as noticeably faint in Seminole Wind, but not here. As soon as this chorus kicks in and the melody changes registers from down here, to up here, we get very clear three-part harmony in this vocal, with the tenor harmony stacking on top of the melody and baritone harmony stacking below.
But don't ask her on a straight tequila night.
And both of these harmony parts, I'm pretty sure, are Anderson himself. Listen to Anderson's harmony as he matches his signature breathy delivery of the melody in the main hook. On the tenor part, he's singing these notes. And on the baritone part, he's singing these. Altogether, it sounds like this.
strength to keep the night.
So much thicker vocals in the chorus, but the real star of the sonic milieu in the chorus, and really of the whole instrumental track, is the one honky-tonk instrument we haven't mentioned yet. The fiddle. Actually, let's backtrack to the intro and turn around so that we can give due credit to the role fiddle plays, to that overall evil sound. Seven notes in that fill, and three of them are the sinister G-sharp we talked about. And the fiddle just has an overall nice dark tone in that fill, one that would make Charlie Daniels proud. And notice how much brighter the fill leading directly into the brighter verse is, by the way.
If you really want to...
But back to the chorus. The fiddle here is all texture. It's basically playing this note, with some rhythmic dancing around the whole time.
Don't ask her on a string to keep the night. She'll start thinking about him, and she's ready to fight. Blames her broken heart.
E is the safest note, if you will, in an A-E-D-E pattern. It's the fifth degree of the A chord, the root of the E chords, and an uncontroversial second of the D chord. In other words, unlike the background vocals, it basically adds nothing harmonically. It's all atmosphere, basically laying down additional texture all up inside the sonic soup that we've been describing. Again, the kind of thing you'd never notice in isolation unless you're really listening closely, but part of the overall fullness of sound that you feel when listening to this song, especially in the chorus. So there's a lot of contrast in this song, right? We've talked about how the intro is dark and menacing, the verse is brighter and a little sparser, and the chorus is fuller and more uncanny. Less canny? I don't know. So ultimately, all this supports the Jekyll and Hyde theme of the lyrics. Now, the unique approach of this song to this theme is that we're getting a detached point of view. First, we're hearing the bartender's side and the bartender's side only of this conversation about a situation primarily about two other people, the occasional straight tequila drinker and the man who's asking about her. So it's a somewhat detached perspective, the perspective of someone with little direct influence on how this whole thing is going to play out. It's similar to that wise, detached, servant of fate farmer perspective that we talk about a good bit. It's like, not only does she get out of control sometimes, but the bartender's perspective adds another layer of lack of control, if I can say it that way. We also join the conversation in the middle. There's a lot not said in these lyrics, a lot left implication. Pronouns with no antecedents. If you really want to know what, who comes here a lot, she'll start thinking about whom exactly, and who's asking all this in the first place. We're observing an observer, two levels removed from the action, and everyone else seems to know more than we do. It's part of the uncanny way this song strikes listeners. Something sounds off, and everyone else already seems to be aware of it and resigned to it. But let's be explicit about how some of the musical mood shifts match the lyrics. First, that dark, menacing intro signals up front that there is a Mr. Hyde in this story. Is this going to be the Thunder Rolls? Is it all Mr. Hyde? No, the bright fiddle fill that we noted earlier gets us into a lighter, brighter verse, where the bartender describes Dr. Jekyll, the easygoing white wine sipper who just likes to hear the music and dance. But notice something we actually didn't point out before. The only minor chord outside of the intro turnaround is one chord in the pre-chorus of each verse. An F-sharp minor, the sixth chord, shows up briefly for only two beats to break the 1-5-4 pattern of the verse. A bit of a sign of things to come, telegraphing the mood shift that the chorus will bring on top of the line, "Tonight she's only sipping white wine," in verse 1.
Tonight she's only sipping white wine.
That word "only" being an important signal that there are times when there's more to this story. And on the second verse, it's on top of the line, "Just remember her heart's on the mend."
Just remember her heart's on the mend.
A warning. Tread lightly, friend. It's not all Chablis, quarters, and change with this one. Then the chorus unleashes the full fury as the mood turns not dark, but thick, a little more chaotic, certainly more uncanny, as we talked about. But, and this is significant, less evil than unpredictable. The kind of thing you stay away from, not so much because you're afraid of it, but because you don't know what may happen.
Tonight she's only sipping white wine. She's friendly and fun-loving most of the time. But don't ask her on a straight tequila night. She'll start thinking about him, and she's ready to fight.
It's wonderful. It's all executed so fantastically well in Straight Tequila Night. A song with just enough contrast and just enough inherent uncertainty to stand out among its peers in a great era and leave us forever asking what happened here. How did it all work out for this guy and this woman? And what song is K-13 anyway? And that's what I'm hearing in Straight Tequila Night. Hey, maybe K-13 is Straight Tequila Night. This woman likes to listen to the very song that's being sung about her at that moment. She's listening to now. Everything that's happening now is happening now. Seems fitting somehow, doesn't it? But that's it. The jukebox just replaced its last 45, and now it's time to find out what song we'll be looking at on the next episode of Nashville Anthems. To that end, I'm going to pull up Satellite Radio's 80s and 90s country station right now and see what's playing. We're back to Tanya Tucker, and this time it's a little too late. I look forward to getting to that one with you in 2 weeks. In the meantime, look up Nashville Anthems on Facebook or Instagram, and let's connect. And of course, don't forget to tell a friend about us. Thanks so much for listening. Bye now. I gotta go. I gotta pick up some change.